and welcome to the Dr. Nyman Show. Today is Wednesday, March 1st, 2017. This morning, WHO held a press availability on the H7N9 in China, which they're now in their fifth wave of that, fifth season of that, and on the H5N8 in Europe. One of the biggest things that was noted in the press briefing this morning was Tamiflu resistance and how WHO is actually kind of saying things that are factually correct but quite misleading. An example would be Dr. Wenqing Zhang basically said, I'm just going to read a part of her statement of what she read at the beginning of the press conference. She says, quote, "In this fifth wave, viruses from about 7% of human cases have had genetic markers associated with resistance to NERM-based inhibitors." And I'll skip the rest of that. Let's see. "This rate is similar to previous waves, although a slight increase was observed. It is still lower than the first wave, according to the data from the WHO Collaborating Center in China's CDC Beijing. Notably, since 2013, except for one environmental virus, all antiviral-resistant viruses were from human cases. For information available, most cases were sampled after treatment with antivirals. This means that most of the resistant viruses were developed after the use of antivirals in patients and not before. WHO is closely monitoring these developments." And then subsequently, after the press briefing was concluded, several articles were written in the media. And this particular one from the Associated Press, again, uses that highly misleading statement and basically says this, "Constant change is the nature of all influenza viruses," said Zhang, said that the resistant viruses were detected in people who were already been treated with Tamiflu, allaying fears that the virus might spontaneously acquire resistance in the wild, which is quite not true. But Dr. Nyman will go into all of that. I just wanted to make that particular point. So, Dr. Nyman, the floor is yours.
Okay, Ryan. Thanks for that introduction on what's out there in the public domain, in the media, as well as in the update this morning. And as you said, the problem with the update is one of these factually correct, highly misleading statements, which has been picked up by the media. The wire services and so the general public is really doesn't understand what the true situation is. And the data is quite glaring and quite straightforward and now quite public for anybody that wants to look at the sequence, which is very few people outside of the scientific community, including the reporters that are putting these reports out there, essentially relying upon this presser this morning. And just for a little bit of clarification, a little background, the H7N9 in the past has been low-path. The low-path was first identified in humans in 2013. That led to a fairly large outbreak, and it was very large the year after that. And then in 2015 and 2016, it calmed down quite a bit. And this year, it's made the news because there were quite a few cases and an associated high fatality rate. And so it's grabbed the headlines because of the number of cases. The dramatic change really happened when a businessman from Taiwan went to Guangdong Province and came back with symptoms and then subsequently was tested and was positive for H7N9. And that sequence was released, as he said, and what was striking about that sequence was that, A, it wasn't low-pass anymore. It was high-pass. So it had picked up a polybasic cleavage site. The size of the H7 was actually 12 nucleotides larger than it had been in the past. And that was because it had picked up four additional amino acids, and these were all at the plebiscite, and three of them were basic amino acids. So it really had a polybasic plebiscite, which is indicative of high path avian influenza. And this case actually had a couple other changes that were concerning. One was that it was Tamiflu resistant, and the other was that it had E67K. E67K is a mammalian adaptation, lets the virus replicate at a higher rate when it's at a lower body temperature, which is the case for humans, 37 degrees centigrade versus birds, which is 41. The E version, which is the avian version, is optimal at 41 degrees. So it's optimal in a bird. The K is much more active in a human. And there's a tendency that if it does have the K, there's going to be more of the virus, and that's going to be create a poor prognosis. And so this did have the E67K, and it was Tamiflu resistant. A couple of days later, the Guangzhou Institute in Guangdong Province published a sequence from a 56-year-old male, and the characterization sheet indicated that patient had died, and it had all three of the same markers. It was high path, had the same polybasic plebiscite as Taiwan. It also was Tamiflu resistant, and it also had E67K. And WHO in Beijing released two sequences. One was from a female, 43-year-old, who had recovered, and that one also has Tamiflu resistant, was also high path, the same previous site, but didn't have E67K, which suggested the viral load may have been somewhat lower, and that may have contributed to her ability to recover and be discharged from the hospital. But then a WHO report indicated that she was part of a cluster, and her older sister, 45-year-old, had actually tested positive for H7N9, and she had died. So presumably she was also infected with the high path. We didn't sequence from her sister as it been released, and not clear whether there will be one. But the likelihood is that since the younger sister cared for the older sister, she got infected by her sister, and the H7N9 high path that she had was probably in her sister also. And then they also released a sequence that pretty much matched the deceased case. They initially also said that was from a 56-year-old male. The sequences were virtually identical, and so of course he had the same markers, same polybasic plebiscite, same Tamiflu resistance, and the same E67K. Except some of the media reports indicated that patient was alive, and then it was continued to be somewhat confusing because WHO did do an update on the high path, and they cited the two cases, and they noted that as of February 22nd, the case that was still in the hospital was in critical condition, but was not had not died. And then the presser this morning, they reiterated that this case was still in the hospital. So it's still a bit unclear as to whether there are two cases, one of which died and the other is in critical condition, and the similarities in the sequence would suggest that might actually, in fact, represent another cluster because they were in the same location also. Or it could mean that, there's only one case, and that case has been sequenced by two different labs and got virtually identical sequences. And there's a discrepancy in the status of that case. That Guangzhou says the patient died in January, and Beijing said the patient is alive in late February. So that's still a little bit up in the air. But the main point is that regardless of come and whether these four sequences came from three or four cases. All four of the sequences have TAMBC resistance. So the statement that was made that has been picked up by the media that only 7% of the sequences have TAMBC resistance is due largely to the fact that a couple of days ago the WHO facility in Beijing released about 50 H7N9 sequences from human cases. These were almost exclusively from, and these were all late 2016, early 2017. About half of the sequences were from January in 2017. Half of them were in December of 2016. There were a few more that were in November 2016. So all of these sequences, which were released on February 25th, were recent cases, but they were all low pass, and none of them were TAMBC resistant. So the 7% really comes from combining the four high pass sequences with the 50-something low-pass sequences and coming up with a 7% overall. But the reality is that the low-pass frequency is based on the release sequences, is 0%, and the high-pass is 100%. And since all of these cases, or the vast majority of these cases, would have been treated with Tamiflu, the argument that only the high-pass sequences develop Tamiflu resistance because of Tamiflu treatment, whereas none of the low pass develop Tamiflu resistance because of the Tamiflu treatment. There's not really a good scientific explanation as to why that would be the case. And a much better explanation is that the high pass does have Tamiflu resistance. And in birds, it may be a mixture with that being represented at a low frequency, because there have been seven bird sequences sequences where both the H and the N were released. These came from live markets, and the seven H's all have the same plebiscite, and the seven N's do not have the resistance. But of course, these would not be under selective pressure, but it's possible that the birds have a lower level, or it's possible that they're just not related to the one from the humans. The humans were in three different locations, and they actually, even though they're all high path, and even though they all have the same plebiscite, and even though all the human cases are Tamiflu resistance, the constellations are really different in all of these. And so the human sequences do not match the bird sequences as far as the constellation. And the only two sequences that actually match each other in the Tamiflu resistance category are the two that may actually be from the same person, the 56 and 57-year-old. Which are literally virtually identical. Four of the sequences are identical. Three of the segments, four of the segments are exact matches. Three of them have a single nucleotide difference, and the eighth segment actually only differs by two positions. So they're pretty close to, you know, as close as you can get to being identical sequences. You know, that would all be consistent with both of those sequences coming from the same individual, or both of those sequences coming from a cluster. They clearly have a common source. And so that's where it stands. So the problem is that the high pass, so far all of the human high pass sequences have been Tamiflu resistant. None of the human low path who have been treated with Tamiflu, because it's low path in birds. A high percentage of the cases treated with the low path actually do die. And so in China, I would assume that virtually all of these cases were treated with Tamiflu, regardless of whether they were high or low path. In fact, the high path, they didn't even know they were high path until they actually did the sequence, unless, you know,
epidemiology, and knew there was some burn exposure, the birds were dying, that would be an indication they were high staff. But in all likelihood, you know, they would be treating them with whether they were high or low path, because it does have a high fatality rate in the low path. It's low path for birds, but it's still lethal for humans. But these initial numbers raise the possibility that it may be more transmissible, because two of these four cases are, and all of the human sequences are Candida flu resistant. It's really four out of four sequences, regardless of whether they came from three or four patients. And so it is a worry that the high path has already been found in a cluster, and all of the human sequences have had the Candida flu resistance, even though they have different constellations. So we'll monitor this. It's not clear how many additional high path sequences are going to be forthcoming. All of these sequences were released at least a week ago. So the big influx of new sequences to the database have all been the low path. And you can actually tell without even looking very closely, because Beijing generally releases sequences that just cover the coding region. And if it's low path, it's 1,683 nucleotides. And if it's high path, it's 1,695. It's got 12 additional nucleotides, so it's got four additional amino acids. So that's kind of where they stand, and the Candida flu resistance is a major concern, and treatment in all likelihood, since it's four out of four, represent just the emergence of a resistance that's already circulating in the background. The idea that it would only show up in the high path in all of the cases, and it wouldn't show up in the low, in any of the low paths. It's not, you know, in one case it kind of develops spontaneously in high path, and it never develops in low path. It's a dramatic difference between the two different viruses, which represent likely two different lineages. And so that's kind of it. This is just a quick update, because that 7% came out, and it's now in the media reports, and it's accurate. The 7% of the public sequences have Candida flu resistance, but it's highly misleading, because all of the Candida flu resistant sequences are in those four sequences that are high path.
Okay, well, one other point I just wanted to make as well is that the press availability or presser that they had this morning, it really, which is not surprising, it really was quite lack of details. They really didn't, or even information in general. I mean, really, for people that have been paying attention to this for quite a while, or even for even the last couple of weeks that have been following this, especially this high path emergence with the Tamiflu resistance, have really, you know, they really did. You really kind of knew more than what they said. I mean, for some people in the media, this actually probably comes as a shock hearing this from them. You know, most people haven't really, I mean, I really haven't seen this report anywhere in the press, and, you know, not really even until today. And, but even still, they basically gave less information than was already even known than we've been giving in these podcasts. So we've actually been giving out a lot more information than even what WHO did in their own press briefing this morning. So, I mean, Dr. Nyman, I mean, that's quite concerning to me to hear that basically they gave out less information than we've been giving out. And I don't know, what did you think of the press briefing?
Well, that's fairly typical. The press briefings usually don't present breaking information and breaking news, if you will, and they... some of these alarming numbers, and you know, putting out a statement is factually correct but highly misleading is is things that are concerning usually our standard operating procedure. So that's, I didn't hear anything really unusual in the press conference, and most of the reporters don't look at the sequences they rely upon. These are their talking points, and their talking points just kind of parrot what is in the press releases. And that's essentially what the public is reading about. If they looked at the sequences, which they might have trouble reading, including the reporters, they would see that it's pretty dramatic and that all of the resistance is in the high pass, and it's really at 100%. So we'll see if they release more and see if they have further explanation, but it is a concerning situation if the high pass takes hold. And it's a little bit early to see, what that ratio is going to be. The high pass are all recent. The first case is really that cluster, and that was collected on December 29th of 2016. And the other sequences are all from 2017. So it's a fairly recent situation. And even though there's 2017 sequences that were released on the 25th, they're all low pass. So that really indicates that there is a fair amount of low path out there, but there's also some indications that that frequency is starting to go down. And whether the high path will start to go up, that's kind of what one of the key questions is, at least for this season.
Yeah, well, that was one of the other things that the head guy for Beijing WHO Collaborating Center did say, that we are past the peak now. And I have been seeing reports in the Chinese media, Chinese language media that we translate, that we follow regularly, that the epidemiological curve has been going down and new cases have been decreasing. But, I actually, just here a few hours ago, I've actually been seeing some stories, and I really hadn't seen this before. I saw one from Guangzhou this morning. I think it was Guangzhou province. That they had two new cases this morning, and it said that they were exposed in the last 10 days to either sick or dead poultry. Now, I don't really remember seeing that particular statement before. So,
well, the bottom line is the high path has never been reported prior to the first example was the Taiwan case, and as far as the database was concerned, and then the other one showed up. So, I mean, if there are reports of dying chickens and or whatever, poultry, that's what the question is, how quickly the initial high-pass sequences are going to come out. And unfortunately, there's probably a very high likelihood that those high-pass sequences will have the Cabi flu resistance based upon the first four that have been released.
Yeah, well, okay, so I've said, and most listeners will see it themselves, but by listening, like I said, we've been giving out more information than anyone has. I mean, we really have been kind of at the forefront of everything. I mean, I think we were maybe the first or one of the first to report about the high path and the Taiwan sequence was released from about a week or so ago, or a week ago.
Yeah, well, it's not uncommon for the breaking news to be in the sequences, and nobody else is really reading the sequences and reporting on them. So,
because I think I remember you broke
that's not a surprise.
Because I remember you broke that on the Jeff Run show. So, like I said, that's the news is certainly very hard to come by. It seems I mean, you've been following this stuff for better part of a decade now. I mean, WHO always been real bad with giving out information?
Well, the information is kind of like this situation where they put out information that's factually correct but highly misleading about Cabi flu resistance. It's a pretty dramatic example of that. So let's see what happens, and we'll do another podcast when there's some new info.
Yeah, well, listeners, we'll always update this as big updates happen with the virus. Like I said, we're usually the first to put it out, so listening here is a good probably thing to do. So As always, go to our website, RakelMonomics.co, which, again, is always updated all the time. And Dr. Nyman's H5N8 map, I think I have that up. That's always updated, and his H7N9 map is always updated. Every week is CHP puts out new, because they're really the only ones putting out detailed reports of individual cases and details regarding them as far as age and gender and city. We put those on the map as they come out. So, like I said, follow us, and we'll do this as the situation unfolds, which it looks like it's unfolding pretty rapidly. So, thank you, everyone, and have a good day.